back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Keeping It Sports with them three.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Well, I'll need some beer.
Are you ready?
You have to ask me nicely.
Come on now, don't be bashful.
Are you ready, ready?
Place for the best sports talk and news surrounding each league.
I can prove it with my usual flawless logic.
Hey man, this time I'm gonna do it my way.
What's your name again?
And now, here's your host, M3, Mike Rosansky, coming to you from Freehold, New Jersey. It's time for Keeping It Sports with M3, powered by, well, I guess this week just Facebook, Instagram, any form of social media that you may intake this podcast, whether it be also on Spotify or any other podcast platforms out there, as we're doing the podcast from my house this week. Hello, everyone. I am, of course, Mike M3 Rosansky, coming to you here on this Monday, the 19th day of the month of February. Hope you're all enjoying a great President's Day, enjoying a day off, enjoying what was a very fun, exciting weekend in the sports world, especially for yours truly, who got to spend his Saturday night in frigid temperatures at MetLife Stadium watching the Stadium Series matchup between my New Jersey Devils and the Philadelphia Flyers. I was joined by my longtime dear friend, the great Katie Walsh, as we sat out there in below 30 degree temperatures watching a hockey game, at sometimes questioning what the hell was wrong with the two of us sitting out there for that amount of time. But we had a great time. Even though the Devils won, the result of the game really didn't matter to me on that night, as I got to spend some time with a good friend of mine that I rarely get to see. And it was a very fun, successful weekend for the NHL, as they had two Stadium Series matchups over the weekend with Devils Flyers on Saturday night, followed by Rangers Islanders on Sunday afternoon. That one, even though it was listed as an Islanders home game, felt more so like a Ranger home game at MSG, with how they were blasting the Ranger goal music, how the crowd was mostly made up of Ranger fans as they watched the New York Rangers come back from trailing 5-2 in the third period to win the game in overtime. Just a collapse down the stretch by the Islanders as they allowed two goals in the final 4 minutes, including a power play goal in which the Rangers decided to pull Igor Shesterkin and go with a 6-on-4 attack there that helped them in the final couple of minutes get back into this game. But all in all, I thought it was a successful weekend for the NHL, because you have a very unique situation, a hockey game in a football stadium, something that you don't get to see each and every single day, something that's fun, something that, even though it is a regular season game, kind of adds a little bit of spice into what can be a drag of a 82 game schedule. And when you're a sport like the NHL, when you're a sport like Major League Baseball, sometimes you got to do some unique creative things, some things that are going to keep your fans locked in, that are going to keep your fans excited, and hell, even draw in more fans, draw in new people to want to be involved with your product, to want to view your product and say, hey, that's something exciting, that's something enjoyable to watch. Especially because the NHL and Major League Baseball, more so than the other two sports, are regional sports. Those sports, you have your diehard passionate
fans of respective teams, but you don't have a lot of fans with those sports where they're saying, oh, I could just randomly sit down and watch any two teams. For yours truly, I'm a diehard baseball fan. I'm someone that can put on any game during the summer if I've got nothing going on and watch it, enjoy it, learn something about those teams. Even if they're two teams, say, from the National League that I know nothing about, that are only playing the Yankees maybe once during that season, I could still sit there, enjoy it, feel like I'm gaining something by watching this game. You don't have a lot of those when it comes to the NHL and MLB. You more so have those when it comes to the NBA and the NFL. Yeah, you have your diehard, crazy, passionate fan bases, but there's also those people out there who maybe they lost their team because their team got relocated. Maybe they don't have a favorite team because they're more so into the gambling aspect of it. Or in the case of the NBA, they're more drawn to stars, more drawn to star power. And there was a lot of star power on display this past weekend in the NBA All-Star Weekend's annual festivities. But it's a weekend that, quite frankly, you start to look at if you're the NBA and you're a fan of the sport and you say to yourself, what the hell are we doing here? Why are we still doing things like this? Why is it seeming like we care more so than the players care about this? Because it used to just be, at least over the last couple of years, where you started to feel like the NBA All-Star game is a waste of our time. Now, what had been so much of a fun event, had been so much of an event that I look forward to each and every single year, All-Star Saturday night is starting to lose a little bit of its luster. And while I like some of the things that they do, they try to spice things up, like doing something what they did where you had Steph Curry go one-on-one with the WNBA's Sabrina Ionescu from the New York Liberty in a three-point shootout. That's cool. That's awesome. You draw in not just your casual and your diehard NBA fans, but maybe you draw in some female viewership, some people that maybe don't watch the NBA, but are curious seeing, could a female player top Steph Curry in a three-point shooting contest? The NBA / WNBA's version of the Battle of the Sexes. Although, unlike the tennis version from almost, 40 years ago, these two athletes actually have respect for each other's game. It's created an idea now that you could draw on it going into the future. Maybe do you add players from both sides? Do you add more competitors from the WNBA? Especially if Caitlin Clark decides to leave college and go to the WNBA after this season. Do you add, say, someone like a Dame Lillard onto the NBA side of things? There's possibilities with that. But when you look at the rest of All-Star Saturday night, it's losing its luster. It's losing what made it fun growing up as a kid. You still have the three-point shooting contest, which is kind of like the highlight of the night now. Then you have this team skills competition, which to me it doesn't make sense because you have one team from the Pacers. Obviously, they're the home representatives for this event as it's in Indianapolis. But then you have a trio of youngish all-stars who don't play together, probably barely had any practice time together, and then three guys that are former first-round picks in Anthony Edwards, Paolo Banchero, and Victor Wembanyama. If you had trios that actually play together more often, I think then that would make a lot more sense. But just having these makeshift teams, these groups of guys that you throw together at the last minute, is not something that I really look at and say, oh, that's something fun. That's something that I'm enjoying. Then, of course, there's what has become the ultimate drag, the NBA slam dunk contest. And all due respect to this young fellow in Mac McClung from the G League, who becomes the fifth player to win back-to-back dunk contests, who is showing crazy athleticism, even though he's kind of a smallish guy and probably limited in his abilities. That's why he is still playing in the G League. This is the kind of event that you want to see the stars. This is the kind of event that you want to see the top names in this sport. All goes back to years ago when it looked like LeBron James was going to be in the dunk contest. Remember, a year out, he promised us he would participate in the dunk contest and then pulled back at the beginning of the following season, decided, nah, that's not something that I really want to be part of. Once he did that, you started seeing the rest of the star power in this league say, listen, if the face of this sport doesn't want to be part of it, then why should I? Which is really a shame, because if you go back to the days, you would see guys like Michael was in it. You would see Kobe Bryant do it. You saw Vince Carter do it. Tracy McGrady has been in the dunk contest. Dwight Howard used to be in it. Blake Griffin. A lot of top names in this sport. We had that one year where Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine put on a show, but that was before anyone really knew who those guys were. Since then, it's a lot of guys where you're like, who the hell is this? You see it and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then you never hear from them again. So there's got to be some kind of incentive for these players to be part of the dunk contest. There also has to start being some kind of incentive when it comes to the All-Star game, because that was a total snooze fest last night. That was a absolute bore what we watched. You have a game that ends 211 to 186. That is the human version of taking a video game, turning all of the difficulties off, and just having the computer-played team stand there as you constantly run by them hitting the dunks. The only guy that looked like they were showing any effort was Karl Anthony Towns when he put up 31 points in the fourth quarter. Other than that, it was a whole bunch of guys just running layup drills, seeing who could dunk the ball the hardest. A bunch of guys just jacking up threes. And how is it good for the sport to have a basketball game in which the two teams are putting up a combined 168 three-point attempts across the game? You're seeing guys who really shouldn't be shooting three-point shots, jacking up shots from the logo. I know Dame Lillard made a couple of half-court shots, but it was not fun to watch. It was not entertaining. The only entertaining part was listening to the commentary, listening to the thoughts of Draymond Green and Charles Barkley on the alternate broadcast, or hearing what Reggie Miller and Candace Parker had to say during the TNT broadcast of this, because they all seem like it was like, yeah, all right, cool, some of these crazy threes, these dunks that were being shown, but there's really no competitiveness to this. The Eastern Conference put up 51 points in all four quarters. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you incentivize it, whether you put home court advantage for the NBA Finals on the line, something that I'm not for because I thought that was a waste of time when Major League Baseball did it for the All-Star game, or you give every player on the winning team $1 million, something along that range. But there's got to be something done. I even saw last night on social media that 23 years ago, in the 2001 All-Star game. The final score of that game was Western Conference 101, Eastern Conference 100. They played defense back then. They took this game seriously. But these players are not showing that same kind of effort. When you have someone like Anthony Davis saying at the end of the game that his most memorable moment from this game was when the hype teams for the Chicago Bulls and Indiana Pacers went through their dunk routines between the third and fourth quarters. He said, quote, "I think the best moment we were talking about it was the Bulls and Pacers dunkers with the trampolines. They were very, very impressive." That can't be the most significant part of it. That can't be the most entertaining thing, especially because we as the fans, we don't see that. The only in-between quarter activities we see is when Jennifer Hudson is doing the halftime show. Other than that, we get nothing as far as the off-the-court stuff in between quarters. We maybe hear a little bit of when players are mic'd up. But other than that, we're not seeing the same stuff that they are doing. This game, it's quickly becoming a waste of time. Quickly becoming what the NFL Pro Bowl has always been. Quickly becoming what the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is. And that's just a glorified, I don't even know if you can call it a scrimmage, but glorified waste of time just so the NBA can make money off of having a television product that night. How much of a waste of time it is when you consider you more or less had a 2-hour pregame show for this. The guys came on at 6:30 for an hour and a half pregame. Then with all of the pregame hoopla on the court, you didn't get the actual game started until about 8:40. And we're lucky that it's on President's Day weekend. Otherwise, you would have had no one watching that. You would have had no one still tuning in because you would have people going to work the next day, kids going to school. But something next year has got to change. Otherwise, it's going to continue to look like as big a waste of time as all the other All-Star games have become. And it's a shame because this used to be the weekend everyone looked forward to in the middle of a season. And now we want to do anything but watch this crap. Got plenty left to go in this podcast. Give you some thoughts on LeBron and his future, mixing some things to watch for in the league as we head into the final third of the season. I'll mix in some baseball and football talk as well as we go along here. So there's a lot of things on my mind, a lot of things to talk about today. Glad you guys could join me, whether you're listening to the podcast version or you're watching it on Facebook right now. And as I tell you each and every single week at this time, please sit back, relax, hell, put your feet up if you feel like it, and continue keeping it sports with M3.
I'll be back.
Now, while I got on LeBron James's case about his lack of participation in the slam dunk contest and how I think that's impacted a lot of other guys in making the decision on whether or not they would perform and participate in the dunk contest, there's no doubt that as fans, we should appreciate this man. We should appreciate what he's brought to the league, how he's impacted a generation of fans and impacted a generation of players, and someone that as sports fans, we really should embrace and appreciate while he's here because we're going to miss him when he's gone. But at the same time, while we can respect him and appreciate him, there's no doubt at times he leaves us scratching our heads. There's no doubt that he also can be incredibly annoying at times with some of the things he does, like posting emojis of an hourglass on social media, all the kind of cryptic stuff he posts, or some of his post-game commentary, or even his pre- and midweek commentary when talking about the Lakers, such as he's talking about his retirement over this past weekend. And he said that, oh, he's not sure whether he's just going to go quietly into the night like Tim Duncan did, or he's going to have a retirement tour. Come on, people. I think we all know by now that this guy is in all likelihood going to have some form of a big going away party, some kind of big celebration for himself when his career is all said and done. Remember, this is the same guy that had a TV special for when he became a free agent back in 2010, just to announce where he was going. He wasted an hour of our time when that could have been done on social media, or he could have just had a brief 15-20 minute interview somewhere announcing his intentions. He didn't have to have the full spectacle that he wound up having to announce that he was going to be joining the Miami Heat. So you really think that this guy, just one of these summers, is going to put out there a press release like Tim Duncan did, saying, yep, that's all, folks. I'm moving on in my life. I'm no longer playing in the NBA. That's a bunch of garbage. That's a bunch of BS coming out of this man's mouth. I would have to see it to believe it, that LeBron James does not have a full-on retirement tour. And he's saying that, oh, I've never been great with accepting all the praise, or been kind of a weird feeling. You know, in the back of his mind, he loved it all. Whether it be the decision special or that preseason celebration that him, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh had once upon a time, or the fact that last season they stopped a game so that they could celebrate LeBron James becoming the all-time scoring leader in NBA history. I mean, come on, LeBron. Love you. I appreciate what you've done for this sport. But you can't BS a bunch of BSers. It's a bunch of crap from you that you don't know what you're going to do or what you're plans are as far as how long you're going to play. And I don't even buy this crap coming out of his mouth where he told the TNT crew last night that he only heard about the potential trade rumors of him going to the Golden State Warriors at the same time as all of us. You know that the Lakers don't let anything go by without passing it through LeBron James first. So, of course, he knew about it. Of course, he had probably heard from Draymond Green about it, considering they have the same agent. They're represented by the same people. It's that kind of stuff that just makes you scratch your head and say to yourself, does he think we're all fools? Does he think we're all idiots? I mean, what he should be more concerned about is the fact that as we sit here today, the Los Angeles Lakers are in ninth place in the Western Conference. The Los Angeles Lakers are 3.5 games behind the New Orleans Pelicans for the sixth spot in the Western Conference playoffs. And that is a big importance to the Lakers because with the age and tread on LeBron James, even though he doesn't show it, he is 39 years old and in his 21st season. And with the fact that Anthony Davis has always dealt with some kind of issue, if you're the Lakers, the last thing you want to do is once again have to go through the play-in tournament. and especially have to do so with being the 9 seed, because then you would have to win 2 games in a 72-hour span just to get into the real playoffs, where in all likelihood you would have a team like the Timberwolves or the Oklahoma City Thunder sitting there waiting for you, or at least right now that's the way it would look. Two teams with young, fresh legs that would want to run up and down the court on an aging LeBron James. Hell, what would be even worse for them, they get through that matchup and then have to once again go through the Nuggets in the second round. I mean, you want to try to avoid the Denver Nuggets in the postseason as long as humanly possible. You want to be not seeing them until the Western Conference Finals and then take your shot with them. You don't want them in the first two rounds having to go from playing a young athletic team to then go into that altitude. That would not be the best thing for the Lakers. So both them and the Golden State Warriors, who are in that 9-10 matchup right now, are going to be looking to avoid the play-in as we head into the final third of the season. And the Warriors are going to be doing so kind of looking differently, kind of with a new feel, new vibe, I guess you can say, to them, as there's been changes with this team in the last 2 months. We have seen the emergence of the youngster in Jonathan Kuminga, a young man who I think we were all, myself included, very quickly to write off, very quickly to label as a possible bust. And in the last 2 months, he's exploded for this team. He's become their second best player. He's become one of the most important players for this team, especially during that time when Draymond Green was out serving his suspension. Now, Draymond has tried to take some credit for that, saying that, oh, me not being here has allowed for Kuminga to really develop, for Kuminga to take a bigger role with this team. I think that's a little bit of arrogance by Draymond, but at the same time, I can understand how he would view it that way, just based off the fact that you needed someone to step up. You needed someone to be that next guy, especially at a time with Draymond Green out, and with the fact that we're watching probably the worst version of Klay Thompson that we've ever seen. The weird thing about Klay Thompson this year is he's always been a clutch player, especially late in games, but the fourth quarter has been his worst quarter. The fourth quarter has been the time where he's missing shots he normally makes, and now it has gotten to the point where he's not getting as many fourth quarter minutes as he used to get. And you start to see this when it comes to the deterioration of a dynasty. You see players, great players, get old before our eyes. Great players start to lose a step. And that's the most difficult thing to see as a fan, in watching someone not be the same player that they once were, not be the same player that you once loved. Hell, as a Yankee fan, I dealt with it because I saw the end of Jorge Posada's career. He was an unhappy part-time player, kind of in a reservish role, not getting much catching time, and it sucked to watch the way he went out. So I'm sure Warrior fans are doing that same thing right now with Klay Thompson. And you saw that next step in it last week when Steve Kerr moved him to the bench. First time since his rookie year in 2011-2012 that Klay Thompson came off the bench in a game. I'm sure it had to be frustrating for him as a guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. But it's important for the team. It was better for the team, him coming off the bench in that role. And he took the best possible view of it, at least publicly, when he mentioned how, you know, Manu Ginobili went through this same thing. In fact, most of Manu Ginobili's prime was spent as that great bench player. So maybe this adds a new lease on his career. Maybe this adds a new fire, a new energy for Klay Thompson as he moves forward here. You have this happening with Klay. Of course, you need younger people step up behind them. And you're seeing a transition with the Warriors roster. You still have Steph Curry. You still have him at his peak of powers. But you're starting to see this transition from Draymond Green to Jonathan Kuminga. You're seeing this transition from Klay Thompson to a youngster in Brandon Podzinski. And I don't think Podzinski, while he is a good three-point shooter and kind of looks like a youngish Klay Thompson, while I don't ever think he will be Klay Thompson to his fullest extent, because Klay's viewed as one of the greatest shooters of all time, this is what you need when you have a franchise that has championship level expectations, as some of your star players that aren't necessarily the face of the franchise to the level of Steph Curry are getting older. You need newer, fresher faces to step in order to continue carrying forward, in order to avoid a rebuild situation for as long as possible. So while in the second half, I'm going to keep a keen eye on the Warriors and Lakers in the West. In the East, two teams that I'm going to be keeping an eye out for are the Bucks and the Knicks. The Bucks, who, they've got to be frustrated. They've got to be annoyed about their situation, because it almost comes off as a clown show, what's going on with them right now. It almost feels like, and I said this a few weeks ago, that Doc Rivers kind of like backdoored his way into becoming the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. And maybe this is the basketball version of karma, what the Bucks are going through right now, as they're 3-7 with Doc as their coach, and in the last week have had two pretty bad losses, including losing to the Miami Heat in a game in which they were without Jimmy Butler due to personal reasons. And then their loss on Thursday night, where they had to scratch and claw their way back against the Memphis Grizzlies, only to fall short at the end with Dame turning the ball over at midcourt. And on top of it, they were pretty much drunk from behind the three-point line. Why they're jacking up as many three-point shots, at some point Doc had to look at his guys and say, guys, it's not happening for us tonight. Drive the paint. You've got one of the best players in this sport in Giannis Antetokounmpo here. Try to exploit our advantage with his size in the paint. Try to exploit the fact that we've got a pretty good post player in Brook Lopez, or at least I thought they had a pretty good post player in Brook Lopez. I've been totally disgusted since he went to the Milwaukee Bucks and the fact that they turned him into a 7-footer that just wants to jack up threes all day. Now that this team is going into the break after their head coach called them out after the Grizzlies game, saying that some of our guys were here, some of our guys were in Cabo. You're seeing the frustrations from Giannis talking about how, oh, this is his fourth coach in the last 6 months. The Milwaukee Bucks just look like a team in total disarray. A team that, well, yeah, they made the big, fancy, shiny move right before the start of the season to get Damian Lillard. are a team without a sense of urgency. And that's something that they should have more of an emphasis on, considering, yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo signed the max extension. He's there through the 2025-2026 season. But after that, he can become a free agent when he's still 32 years old, when he's still got a bit of his prime left to go. Who's to say that he's a Milwaukee Buck for life? Who's to say, hell, a year or two from now, he doesn't look at the landscape of things and say, you know what, F this, I'm out of here. I want no more as far as this crap, because I'm the only one that really has a true emphasis on wanting to win here. So the Bucks, they have got to really get their crap together. They've really got to wake up here. And what it's going to start with is having a healthy Chris Middleton, having this team trust and believe in Doc Rivers going forward. That is, if he is truly the guy to go forward with. And Doc Rivers, his reputation is on the line here. We know that he's won a championship with the Boston Celtics, but that was a long time ago. That was 16 years ago. And this is a guy that since then, with three different franchises, has blown 3-1 series leads in the postseason. And when you have an Eastern Conference that is as wide open as it is this year, you can't take anything for granted. You can't take anything lightly. That's why Knicks fans everywhere right now have got to be disappointed. And not so disappointed in the team's play, because the disappointment there can be attributed to the fact that they've lost four in a row. But look at this team right now. They're the walking wounded. They're without so many players on that roster. Without Bogdanovich last Wednesday. DiVincenzo missed last Wednesday due to a hamstring. You've been without Hardenstein, Ananobi, Randall, Mitchell Robinson, guys that are important cogs on this team. It's essentially been Jalen Brunson and a bunch of reserve players for a while now. You can understand why now they're starting to lose some games to teams that just a couple of weeks ago, they were running out of the gym. Just a couple of weeks ago, you were having parties at Madison Square Garden thinking, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. But now in the last week, you've seen them lose to the Rockets in a game where I can understand Knicks fans feeling like they were hosed, not just by the call at the end of the game where the referees later admit that Jalen Brunson did not foul Aaron Holiday on that final three-point attempt, but the fact that the Houston Rockets, who have no one of note on that team, don't have any big-time stars that the casual fan could name. They get 33 foul shot attempts, and the Knicks only get 12. Like, that's a bit ridiculous. And then you lose DiVincenzo. You just have Brunson and a bunch of reserve players. You can't expect to win many games like that. So this All-Star break probably came at the best time for the Knicks. They need to get this team healthy, need to get them right. And you hope that starts to happen this Thursday night in Philadelphia against the Sixers, where the Sixers are still without any form of a timeline on when Joel Embiid comes back. You need to get going with that game. Have that game be a launching pad game for you, because it doesn't get easier after that. After that, you got to come home and play the Celtics on Saturday night at the Garden. And you don't want to be reeling coming into that game on a 5-game losing streak, not knowing who could potentially be available for you on that night.
I'll be back.
we are about to see the first move, the first domino of the NFL offseason, as tomorrow is the beginning of a period of time in which teams can make decisions on possibly placing the franchise tag on one of their free agents. And remember, when it comes to the franchise tag, you have two versions of the tag, the exclusive tag and the non-exclusive tag. The exclusive tag means the player that you place the tag on can't talk to any other team. They remain under your control, can only negotiate a long-term deal with you between now and July, or they could sign a one-year tenure for the average annual salary of the top five players in their position. The non-exclusive tag means that you can talk terms with other teams, but your team has the right to match that offer sheet, or if they decline it, they get two first-round picks from the team the player signs with, and that's something that we've rarely, if ever, have seen happen. The more likely situation, and this was the dumbest thing I've ever seen, was when Josh Norton had a franchise tag placed on him by the Carolina Panthers. All of a sudden, right after the NFL draft, it gets pulled off him, and he's an unrestricted free agent, which made no sense at the time and still makes a little sense. I mean, why wouldn't you at least want to try to get something for your possible free agent? That's a conundrum that the Kansas City Chiefs find themselves in right now. That is a situation that they now have to answer for, because they have a bunch of pending free agents. They have a bunch of guys that they could potentially lose in free agency, led by Chris Jones and Legarius Sneed. And you've got to make a decision on these guys. You've got to make a decision on, all right, do we place the franchise tag on Chris Jones, run the risk of losing Sneed, knowing that we have Duffy here as another possible number one corner? But McDuffie and Sneed are two different types of corners. One is more of a corner that will be up and try to create some havoc as a pass rusher at times, or cover a tight end, while the other is more of your prototypical man-to-man corner to stop a guy downfield. So if you lose Sneed, you're possibly, if you're viewing McDuffie as your number one corner, you're possibly putting him in a role that he's not built for, that he's not suited for. And we saw the problems that they had with Chris Jones last offseason, why he didn't play the first game or two this season before they had to readjust his contract on the fly this year to kind of calm down any disagreements between them. To me, I'm not running the risk of losing Chris Jones. I'm placing the franchise tag on him and then working out a long-term deal with him. Because if you let Chris Jones get into free agency, you never know. There could be that one crazy owner or GM out there that provides him the kind of contract to the level that you're not willing to match. We've seen in the past that the Kansas City Chiefs are capable of developing corners. Look at their first of these three championships in recent years. Chardarius Ward was on their team, and eventually they traded him off to the 49ers after that championship. So they've been a team that is pretty good at developing cornerbacks. They've been a team that can find guys in the secondary. But you don't replace someone like Chris Jones. Now, in signing Chris Jones, it is probably going to hurt you as far as your chances go when it comes to re-signing some of the other guys, whether it be a Willie Gay, whether it be someone like a Drew Tranquil. You got to hope, if you're a Chief fan, that you can re-sign at least one of those linebackers. And what's going to help you is that you hope you can do some restructuring in Patrick Mahomes' contract before you get to free agency and you don't get hurt too badly with some of these guys. But when you have a guy like Mahomes, when you have a coach like Andy Reid, when you have the winning culture that you have, you may be able to replace some of these players with guys who are in the later stages of their career, not looking to break the bank on contracts, and are just looking for that one last shot to win a championship before all is said and done. So while it does look bad as far as free agency is concerned when it comes to decisions that the Chiefs have to make, as long as you've got Mahomes there, as long as Andy Reid is there, I think you're going to be all right. I'm more so, though, concerned with the team they beat in the Super Bowl, the team that for the second time in the last 5 years is the unfortunate runner-up in Super Bowl Sunday, that being the San Francisco 49ers, who now, you always hear it every year with one of these teams, where there's that guy that starts coming out on social media, starts posting cryptic stuff about how they want to get paid, how they're not going to take a discount anymore, want to get a new deal on top of the rookie contract that they already had. This year's guy is Brandon Ayuk, who immediately after the Super Bowl is going on Instagram posting, "Don't forget what got you here." Meaning, this guy wants a new deal. Meaning, he wants to get paid beyond his rookie contract. He sees what Deebo Samuel got a couple of years ago. He wants to get paid like that. You're seeing him already talking about possibly moving on from the 49ers, as well as having his girlfriend post on TikTok saying, "This might be the last time we step foot on Levi because we might not be here next year." You've seen his best buddy saying, "This is the exact reason why we're leaving San Francisco," thanking the 49ers for drafting his brother, but ask him, he only had 3 catches in the Super Bowl after having 1,300 yards. Just all the nonsense you don't want to hear from a player is currently coming out of Brandon Ayuk's camp. And you wonder, with how much they're paying Deebo Samuel, how much they're paying George Kittle, the fact that you're paying Nick Bosa, you're probably going to have to pay big money to Chase Young as he's a pending free agent. The contract for Christian McCaffrey doesn't get any cheaper. Do they start to look at Brandon Ayuk and say, maybe we move on. Maybe we put him out there and there's that desperate team that will throw a whole bunch of draft picks our way, and we can find a sucker to put up with his, at least on paper, bad attitude here. Because who's going to want, like I said, a guy around who's not just putting out cryptic stuff in his own right, but his family members, his friends are posting stuff out there on social media? It's just the kind of headache, the kind of nonsense that if you're a team that has championship aspirations, does not want to put up with. The thing I was more so annoyed with when it comes to the 49ers this past week is the decision to fire defensive coordinator Steve Wilks. unless I know that his defensive philosophies are different than his two predecessors, Robert Saleh and D'Amico Ryans. But it was not Steve Wilkes' fault as why they lost Super Bowl 58. The defense held up its part for most of this game. I thought Nick Bosa at about the midway point of the third quarter, you can make an argument for him as far as the game MVP is concerned with the pass rush that they were putting on Mahomes and company. The Chiefs had no offense going until that weird muffed punt fumble between Luter and Ray-Ray McCloud. But Kyle Shanahan, rather than accepting responsibility upon himself, is making Steve Wilkes the scapegoat here. I just thought that that was an extremely bad look for him. Some of the comments made by the likes of Nick Bosa after the game saying that the Niners weren't prepared for some of the design running plays by Patrick Mahomes. All of that, I think, is what forced the hand here or made Steve Wilkes essentially the dead man walking in this spot. But it didn't sit well with me when I saw this last week. Like, really? You're firing the guy? A guy that led a defense that was fifth in takeaways, was tied for first in the league in interceptions. They were third in the league in points allowed this season. I know that they started to leak some oil getting into the postseason as far as how they were allowing 5.5 yards per carry and even allowing 150 on the ground during this postseason. But it was not the fault of this defense on why they lost Super Bowl 58. Kyle Shanahan coached a stupid game in that second half where they were completely getting away from the ground game. I don't know if it was he was concerned about the hamstring issue that Deebo Samuel was dealing with or if he thought Christian McCaffrey was worn out, but Steve Wilkes deserved a better fate there in San Francisco. Now, it'll be interesting to see who his successor is going to be. Could it be someone like Rex Ryan? We heard Rex Ryan interviewing for the Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator spot just a couple weeks ago before Mike Zimmer got the job. Maybe he's looking to get back into coaching. And before I take another break here, the Dallas Cowboys, they just are annoying as hell. It's bad enough their fan base can make us all annoyed as hell on any given day of the week. But when you're seeing the comments by the likes of DeMarcus Lawrence in the last week on First Take, where he's saying the reason they lost to the Green Bay Packers is because they were burnt out. It's a long season. Their legs just got tired. This is why you hate the Cowboys. This is why the Cowboys are perennial losers. And I say that meaning a team that, yeah, they make the playoffs every year, but you have no faith in them whatsoever when they make the postseason. They will let their fans down every time. They're just perennial losers, overhyped, overrated. So you get comments like this. Then you're having Micah Parsons over All-Star weekend having to defend his teammate saying, yeah, he shouldn't have said that, but we're lacking leadership, we're lacking a voice in the room. Then why don't you be that leader? Why don't you be that voice? This is the problem with the Cowboys and why they don't have success is because of the fact that it's too much of a country club lifestyle there in Big D. Why Jerry Jones does too much coddling of his favorite players and is not hard enough on these guys. And until the day where there's a voice that steps in there, that is a dominant personality, that's not just looking to be best buds with everyone, but is going to hold their asses to the fire and demand better out of these guys, that's all they're going to be, is perennial losers.
I'll be back.
In total, NFL free agency truly gets started, truly gets going in full force. Major League Baseball is going to start to become more of a center of attention here. I'm going to start to get more of my attention on this podcast. And there's been one person who's kind of been in the midst of the slings and arrows of baseball fans everywhere. And that is, of course, Commissioner Rob Manfred. And commissioners of the four major sports are never the most popular in the room. I think the only one that is really liked or in any form respected by the fan base is Adam Silver with the NBA. Other than that, you don't see a lot of love thrown the way of these commissioners. But Rob Manfred has announced that once his current term as MLB commissioner is up, he's going to retire. That being in 2029 when he's 70 years old. And I give Manfred credit in this. There has been some good during his run as commissioner, a run that started after he took over for Bud Selig in January of 2015. You look at some of the things he's done. He successfully had a pitch clock implemented into the game. That has added so much quicker pace, quicker speed to the game, and kind of helped with attendance and viewership both being up last year. You also saw in 2022, he expanded the playoff format to 12 teams. So now you've got more fan bases feeling like they're in it when we get to September. It's not just, we're 10 games back in the division. We got no shot of making the playoffs. Well, now you do. You got three division champions, but you also have three wild card teams. So more teams as we go down the stretch is always a better thing for any of these sports. The black eye that's going to hang on his resume, just like steroids was always the black eye that hung on Bud Selig's resume. But what Manfred is probably never going to be able to get out from under is how he handled the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal. The fact that he gave those players blanket immunity and they faced no repercussions whatsoever. In fact, the only person that's really gotten punished out of that is Carlos Beltran. Because think about it. The Houston Astros have been in the ALCS continuously every year since then. Losing those draft picks really didn't hurt them. Alex Cora got fired by the Red Sox only to get rehired a year later. They essentially had a stick figure in Ron Renneke stand in his place for a year. You had Dusty Baker come in as their manager and get them to another World Series championship 2 years ago. And hey, AJ Hinch, he got another job with the Tigers not too long after it. The players didn't lose out on anything. They kept the championship. The only one that got hurt was Beltran because he got fired before even managing a game for the New York Mets and hasn't gotten another opportunity, another crack at being a coach or manager anywhere since. That's one that's going to be a stain on him. Also, being the commissioner during that lockout that existed between the league and the Players Association in 2021 into 2022 before they delayed the season by a week once they got a new collective bargaining agreement done. And with how there's still tension between the two sides, there's probably going to be another lockout as we head into the 2027 season. So yeah, while there has been some good, he has not been a perfect commissioner by any means. And last week he brought up the idea of there being some kind of free agency signing period, something to stop the situation that we've got going on right now, where you've got the Boris Five that are still out there in free agency. That being Blake Snell, Cody Bellinger, Jordan Montgomery, Matt Chapman, and JD Martinez. See, part of the problem here is these guys being represented by Scott Boras. Well, yes, he usually gets his guys the money. He's overshot that this time around. The only team that's really made an offer to Blake Snell was the Yankees. They offered him something like 5 years or 6 years in that year range for a total of $150 million. And he wants 9 years for 270, which he's out of his damn mind. And look at Blake Snell's career. Blake Snell is not Gerrit Cole. He has two Cy Young awards to his name. But you look at the years outside of those Cy Young awards, as I've mentioned recently, none of those seasons has he started 30 games, has no seasons outside of the two Cy Young awards where he pitched more than 129 innings. And he's a guy that walks a lot of guys. Hell, last year in winning the Cy Young award, he walked 99 batters in 180 innings. While yes, he was able to limit the damage and have a 2.25 ERA, that's not something you want to deal with where you constantly have to go to the bullpen in the sixth inning to bail this guy out. Yeah, I know bullpens have become more of the run of the game these days with these managers so scared to death with having starters outside of the top guys face a lineup three times around. Even the bullpen will get tired out if you keep doing that, say going into July and August, and be burnt out by the season's end. Well, it's great to have Boris as your agent, and all of these guys are useful players, could help a team. He's overshot his market this time around. Bellinger probably should be back with the Cubs. Jordan Montgomery could be a useful starter somewhere. Matt Chapman, as good a glove as we have in this sport at third base. Hell, JD Martinez, I think, would be a great fit with the Mets, but clearly the Mets don't want to do any more spending this offseason. That's why there's a little bit of frustration from the fan base as they spent a lot of money on guys on one-year deals, guys like Harrison Bader, Joey Wendell, Luis Severino, bringing in some relievers in a trade with the Milwaukee Brewers, signing Sean Manaea for the back of the rotation. I understand it can be frustrating as a Met fan saying this guy say that we expect to compete for a playoff spot. We're trying to build a championship caliber team, be a playoff caliber team. But you look at it, you're still paying Verlander and Scherzer through the end of this year. You're waiting for some of these guys to come up in the farm system. And on top of that, this is not the off season where you really want to spend the big money. Next off season is that time. So I know it sucks to hear this if you're a Met fan, but you got to show some patience, especially this guy just got here and you're already turning on him. He has shown he can be a winner in a small market. Now he's got an owner with seemingly endless pockets, but that owner is being somewhat reserved now because he got burnt last offseason by spending it on two pitchers that are either at or close to 40 years old. This was the better bet to take here, especially when you're coming up on a time where you're hopefully going to re-sign Pete Alonso. So a little bit of patience, Met fans. I know it's a hard thing to take. It's a hard thing to grasp. This guy knows what he's doing. He's not someone you should be turning the ugly eye to within his first couple of months as your general manager. And that, my friends, was Keeping It Sports with M3 for Monday, February 19th, 2024. Everyone, please have a great night. Have a fun, safe, happy, healthy week. Hell, you got one life, people. You might as well live it up. And I'll talk to you all again, same time next week. Until then, peace.
We have to go. Good night, everybody.
I have had enough of you.
Thank you for all the fun. Thank you. Hey, shut up, will ya?
I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you. And I don't want to smell you. Now leave.
I'll be back.